Welcome to Yoga Life Lessons.
With myself, Debbie.
Me, Chris.
And also sometimes me, Lowell.
In this episode, we talk about practice when you're not getting what you want, and also when you've got what you want.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It is afternoon. Although I imagine for you it feels more like...
Evening.
The evening.
Yes, it does. It does.
I know,
I'm feeling tired too, Libby. Yes. Chris woke us up at 3 a.m. this morning, leaving the house to come to work. You woke us all up, didn't he?
I did. I did. However, karma has already got me.
Thank you. Thank you, universe.
So, when I was running to work this morning, I got about halfway along and my phone started to ring. Which I assumed was Debbie, and I knew meant that the dog must have howled from the moment that I left, even though I left as quietly as I could. And it just so happened that where the phone rang was at a particular point along the bypass that is prone to flooding. And as I answered the phone, a significantly sized lorry drove through the puddle, drenching me entirely. And so literally, as Debbie said... Well, she didn't say hello. I won't say what she did say exactly.
You woke up Lily, and she is absolutely distraught.
I was suitably...
You absolute...
Suitably drenched.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel like the tables are even?
We'll see. We'll see. Sorry, I will concentrate.
I know, it's hard, isn't it? It is hard to concentrate. She's coming for a kiss.
She is. Oh. She's had lots of kisses today off all of the students. They're having lots and lots and lots. There's no treats in there. We've not hid any treats in there. No, we haven't. But everyone thinks that you're the best dressed dog, don't they?
Yeah. They do.
Yeah. There we go. Anyhow, what is the subject today, Afnan? What would you like us to talk about today?
So today we were going to talk about practice when you're not getting what you want, but also practice once you've got what you want.
Oh, interesting.
What are your opening thoughts?
That song that's in my head. You know, where you don't get what you want, but what you need. What was that song?
Isn't that a Rolling Stones song? Is it Rolling Stones?
Well, yeah. Love that song. Love it. I think it's it happens all of the time. I think people come to yoga in. Do you agree with me? I think people come to yoga when they feel they are in a space of trauma, of desperation, of need of something to fulfill something, and then things do kind of work because you become that little bit more connected to your deeper self, perhaps, and then you become more understanding of what it is you need. So then when you become a little bit more understanding and you give yourself a little bit more space, things seem to pan out a little bit more balanced. And then you think, don't need yoga anymore. Don't need it.
It's got one leg loose. And so then these people, do you see that they come back? Or is that them done, gone, job sorted, no more need for a yoga practice anymore?
Sorry, I'm completely distracted by our lovely dog.
He's on the computer.
He's now trying to get into the passwords.
Maybe we need to take her out.
But yeah, I think... she's a very intelligent dog. She's probably there thinking, what can I get into here? Do they come back? Yes, when they face trouble again. I guess it's the same for... Do you know what? I mean, I was quite lucky because we had this... when I was at school, we had a youth club. And in our youth club, we used to practice yoga. And actually, some of the girls that I went to school with, her mum went to India and she practiced yoga. And yoga was very, very big, especially in the north of Sunderland. So in kind of Seaburn and Thirlwall, there was a lot of yoga. It was a huge Iyengar community.
I was going to say, it's still really the centre of the Iyengar community up here.
Yeah, and so there was lots of school halls used to run yoga, lots of the church halls used to run yoga. So there was tons of yoga ran. And so it became a little bit of a thing that I used to go to just as a bit of a social, and also because it just felt really nice and it felt good. So the element of do people do the actual yoga and then come back, for me, I was probably one of those people as well. Sorry, you're going for the dog, are you? chew toy, always the answer. Because I practiced it with a variety of different people, and then I continued practicing it in my late teens. And even if I nipped anywhere and there was a yoga class going on, I was like, ooh, well, go and see what's going on there and see what it was like. But to be fair, for a good maybe 5 to 10 years, it was very sparse. Not because I had a good life, but because I was busy with work. I was busy just generally finding my feet in what I was doing and so on and so forth. But then when I came a bit more kind of settled, it became a much more established thing. However, I have to say, when I became a little bit more understanding of what yoga really was, that's when my practice just became a constant. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's a lot of the pranayama, a lot of the meditation, a lot of the breath work, a lot of the aspects of being present with myself. And this doesn't mean that you have to be all zen all of the time. It just means that you honor yourself where you're at. Mm-hmm. This isn't me walking around with dreadlocks and mala beads hanging off me and haring pants, although you do see me dressed like that at times without the dreadlocks. Because I just wouldn't have the patience.
You've never considered dreadlocks?
I wouldn't have the patience. I absolutely wouldn't have the patience to maintain them. But it's about just being there with me. And then, yeah. So for me, I can understand it. But then when you get to a certain point in your life and you kind of understand where your path is and what it is you want to do, and bearing in mind, I was way beyond my 20s before I really knew what it was that I wanted to do with my life, then it just become ingrained into my daily life. Mm-hmm. So I understand why people don't have it as their constant, but then when it gets to the point where they do, I don't understand how they don't.
How they don't.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it becomes a real confusion for me.
Yeah, well, I think part of it is because yoga practice is so conflated with therapy generally.
And handstands.
And handstands sometimes too. But people come, maybe they've injured themselves, maybe they want to open up a capacity they don't have. A lot of the time, it's just managing stress and the everyday. And so they come along, and the word they'll use are words like escape and respite. Mm. And they'll say things like, oh, it's a nice distraction. It's a healthy distraction. Mm. It's, you know, a better way than, you know, going out for a drink and relaxing that way. So it's like a healthy distraction.
Mm. But it's not meant to be a distraction.
Yeah, and I think it really misses so much of it. And it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because so many people come in that time where it's like, well, they need it for some reason, whether it's for personal processing or whether a bit like you were saying, like they kind of want something, they want to align themselves to something. We might even use the word manifesting.
Yeah.
They want to manifest
like
something.
I did with that big puddle this morning.
Like you did with that big puddle this morning.
Oh, by the way, my absolute favourite drink of the now.
I know. It's like eggnog.
It is. It's sensational.
0.003% alcohol or whatever.
Yeah, and like yeah. Love them.
All the joyful nostalgia of being allowed a slightly alcoholic drink.
Oh my god! It just
child.
It feels like you know, that eggnog. Was it like baby sham that you used to
it
put in?
Snowball. Oh, baby sham. What was baby sham?
Delicious. Like a fizzy wine.
Yeah.
I was allowed to have it as a kid.
Putting
it in the cash. Anyhow, sorry, back to the subject.
Yeah, so it sort of gets lumped in with this idea of a distraction. And I think you see it a lot. People go and they come and they go and they come. And it's funny because there's so much about committing to a practice that is unassuming, but really worthy of a whole lot of credit. And I think it's very easy for people to use it as a way to mitigate their responsibility, but also take responsibility.
Mm.
So you see a lot of the time that people will come to class and they'll be like, oh, well, this is going on. And they'll consider the yoga as a sort of application to remove something that they consider isn't part of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they go through that process of alchemy, really, they regulate their system, they expand their viewpoint, whether consciously or unconsciously, because so much of the practice is really quite implicit. You know, we're sort of dropping these things in and we're dropping them in, and we've got them onto the mat in a place that's almost deliberately sort of liminal, subconscious, pre-verbal. We're tapping into that sort of almost suggestive states wherein people are beginning to drop enough of their associations with their self outside of the yoga room that they can rewire differently.
It's in my mind, just simplifying what you're saying. No, because it is what you're. I think, in a sentence, it's how everyone drops their shit so that they're able to see what it is or feel what it is they really want. And because of all of these little subliminal messages that are getting dropped in during a session, it means that they go, yes. And then I think people understand what it is to feel good. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest issue with now is, sorry, that is our dog chewing a chew toy in the background, but you know, it's fine. The feeling of happiness is really foreign to people, but also the feeling of happiness is craved so heavily. But that's not the balance. We don't need to get up every day and be like, I'm happy. This isn't like, it's like Groundhog Day. I can't remember that movie where everyone's up and they're like, hello, morning. That's not life. Life is a roller coaster, and the enjoyment of that is you do not know what's going to happen, and you're blessed to have a life. Everybody is very blessed to be here. I'm watching that thing on Netflix at the moment, which is like Life on Planet Earth or whatever it's called, with Morgan Freeman's voiceover, which is just so dreamy, that voice.
It's not Attenborough, though, is it?
It's not Attenborough, yes. No, it's not. But you know what? It's all right.
Close second.
But it's the ability to understand the intricacies and the vastness of how we're even here. Mm-hmm. And people don't think that. People don't sit and think, wow, like we are here, we are present, and how lucky are we? And so for me, I think people crave this happiness and they run after it and they chase it. But in actual fact, you kind of need to just meet yourself where you're at. So when people feel this happiness, they're thinking, ooh, like that, want a bit more of that. I'm going to keep chasing it. But ultimately, what always happens is that kind of hormone that's pumping in then starts to peter out, because it becomes normality. It becomes an everyday thing. It becomes something that is the norm. Your nervous system understands it to be just normal practice. So it doesn't give you that little shoot up anymore, you know, of high dopamine.
Well, it's like anything, isn't it? It's like any relationship. There's always that wonderful, new, exciting honeymoon period. And then it all settles down, and hopefully well. And then the question is, well, how do we deal with the hard stuff of life from the context of this relationship? And I think it's a real strength then of yoga practice that it embeds that capacity to understand that contentment can exist alongside difficulty as well.
Mm-mm. I feel that's where I met myself. Mm-hmm. In my early 30s, I think that was kind of where I had to meet myself. I mean, there was a few years of bit of tempestuous energies and, you know, I felt like I was kind of, you know, rolling around in this kind of wildness of socializing and having a great life, thinking I was having a great life. But really, it was just masking what it was that I wasn't wanting to feel. So then it got to a point where I actually decided, actually, I'm just going to kind of meet myself where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And it was quite brutal for a little while. And I think this happens in a variety of different changes, you know, in big life changes, when you have a baby. I mean, that was a huge one for me, especially because you have all of these endorphins and all of these amazing hormones, and then the reality kicks in, you know. Mm-hmm. Baby
and the hormones drain out.
And the whole, baby isn't sleeping, mm-hmm. you know, the visits die away, and it's just, it's you and the babe all together. That's it, you know. It's, and there's nothing else, and then the baby's growing and growing and growing, and becoming more and more and more in need of what it is that you're there to offer them. And, you know, it becomes hard, you know? And I think this is why it becomes a thing where it was a big question for me, when you have another baby, I'm kind of still dealing with this baby, you know?
Yes.
And so that drive...
When we get a dog.
Yeah. That drive to have another baby, I understand why people do that, because they want to have more and more babies, because it's wonderful. It's a blessed position to be in, but it's that absolute feeling of a newborn baby is a miss. But oh my boy, it's hard.
It's hard, and then you feel conflicted about the fact that you feel like it's hard.
Mm,
especially
mm-hmm.
because, and many people know this already, but it wasn't a... It wasn't a smooth ride for us, you know. It took some time. It took some work.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it happens, and it's this thing, and you're like, well, but for so long it's been this, and for so long it's this, and you sort of have to understand how you reconcile the fact that you can feel multiple ways about it.
And I think that is the key. You're allowed to feel multiple emotions about many different things, mm-hmm. but you don't need to become overwhelmed by it. I mean, I think in the midst of it all, it can feel very overwhelming, and you know you can sit with those feelings, mm-hmm. but then afterwards, when I step out and I look back, I do think, oh, right, okay, so I was just so overwhelmed, but not at any point did I realize myself that actually I'm okay to feel like that. I'm just overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And then I came back into yoga, and then when I got back into my practice and back into the swing of things, because I just stepped out entirely, didn't I? I was just like, no, I just need mm-hmm. to be at home. I just need to be at home. And I kind of shut myself away for a little while, just understanding what it is that I got myself into becoming a mother, really. you might need to just get yourself a tissue.
I blame the child.
You blame the child. I know those school calls are just terrible.
Just a cesspit.
It is. But yes, I think, and then that kind of channels back into the yoga. So as soon as I got back into it, it was just like, right, okay, I get it. So then it kind of taught me that lesson again. Actually, don't step out of it too much. But the thing is, the biggest thing I have is yoga teachers don't have a yoga practice.
They don't always.
As much as they probably should. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I don't mean when they record themselves on Instagram. That's not a yoga.
You can't mean, just say, just like,
I got on my mat, I videoed myself.
No.
Because you always know that you're being watched. You always know that this is for something. It's like right now, you know.
Yeah,
I know that this has been filmed. And I know that, you know, if, you know, I have an itchy head or I was like, oh my God, like, you know it, you're aware that something is being filmed. And it's the same when you have a yoga practice that's being filmed.
It changes fundamentally.
Yeah, like when we take photo shoots for the studio, we set it up.
Yeah.
This isn't a practice. This is not us filming the practice. It's set up purposely mm-hmm. for that. For entertainment, for aesthetic, for beauty, mm-hmm. for just the beauty of the practice. Mm-hmm. But you
to
can't just
something.
Yeah. So but that's not your practice. No. You know, and I think because teachers their practice mm-hmm. falls away. Yes. It changes them. As a yogi.
Yogi. I think there's always that grapple, isn't there, when it becomes a career. And I was talking about that actually this morning. A student asked me, do we only employ graduates of the training?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, no, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
But actually the majority of the teachers are.
Mm.
And the prime reason is that what we find is that having worked with them in such a dedicated way, they know what we're about, you know, because that's what we shared in the training.
Mm.
They're committed to that. They share that same vision. There's something very organic then about the alignment of what we have been very explicit about wanting to achieve.
Well, hold on a second.
And what they've signed up for.
We have 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5. We've got 5 teachers that have never done our training. So
exactly. So I was saying it's not the case.
But yeah.
There is the benefit to it.
Yeah.
But then what I said, the tricky bit, the really hard bit to navigate, is the difference between them being a trainee and a mentee, us as mentors,
mm-hmm.
and that very sort of nurturing parental, like, it's okay, this is this, mm-hmm. this is the next step mm-hmm. sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
to being an employee, or at least being a contractor, wherein it's like, well, this is this, numbers are this is what we need, you need to send us, you need to tell us what's going to go on in your classes so mm-hmm. that we can talk about them.
Do you know what
it's a huge difference.
Yeah, but I think there's only one person, or maybe two teachers that I have actually asked to be a teacher here. Jeannie,
mm-hmm.
during the training, I just seen amazing things in her.
Yeah.
And at first she was like, absolutely no chance. I'm doing this to build my confidence. I'm not teaching. Yeah. I mean, and she's amazing. And I think Emma Emma was the other person that I asked. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two people. Every single other teacher has asked.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the other thing. During the trainings, we get approached. And mm-hmm. I think when we get approached, that's then what makes us think, how would they fit in here? Where would they be? And
mm-hmm.
such like things. So I think actually, In honesty to that question from the student, there's only actually two people that we have invited in mm-hmm. to teach
in that
here.
Way.
Everybody else has asked us or applied, yeah? Uh-huh. So, but it is an interesting one,
and
that
I think
one,
it can be, and I think it becomes the same problem for students, is it people forget what the benefit of what the practice was all about when there isn't a difficulty sustaining that thing.
Mm.
And I really like the idea of, or the analogy of oil in water as an understanding of what you're doing with the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so the notion then is that the water in some way describes...
She's chewing her water bowl now.
The only thing
is
over there that isn't a chew toy.
I know.
Is the one thing she's chewing.
No, there's two things she's chewed. She's chewed her little pen,
mm-hmm.
which is just this little, like, fabric thing.
She's old.
That has a little kind of roll-up door. And her little travel water bottle. But, you know, if there's a curtain or a plant or a plant pot or anything like that, she's quite happy to chew any of that, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
But chew toy, she's like, really?
Yeah, there.
So, yeah, everyone's just given her two toys and then she's deciding to go for the strap of the pen. Anyway, so sorry.
Yes. Yeah, oil in water. And so the notion is that what your practice is a way of tapping into and immersing into and nourishing yourself from, straight to the computer the second he's out the door, that, like, essential part. And it's immersion into that watery place that is what ultimately gives you the clarity of self, because mm-hmm. you know, it's your own depths and your own mirror and ultimately your own sort of magnifying force.
Mm.
And then, but prior to that, there's all these different oils in the water. And so we know, of course, that oil and water don't mix.
Mm.
But you'll know yourself. Maybe you've seen like oil, like petrol or something in a puddle on the street. And sometimes like it can entirely obscure the water.
Mm.
It can be broken up. Like if you boil oil in water, it can be broken up into little droplets that just seem like they're everywhere. But it is still fundamentally separate. And then the only way really to get the oil off is to separate it through the... You burn the oil off, right?
Mm-hmm.
You burn the oil off.
Mm-hmm.
And so just as all these practices of tapasya clear that oil out, she's like...
Let me down. No, because you just go play with the computer. What's this? There we go.
Yeah.
And this is the first official meet of Lily, anyway.
Lily in the podcast.
I've heard, and I was saying that people were saying... about the spelling of her name, but there's a bit of a, there's a history to the reason we've called her Lily and Lotus, and Lowell somehow just loved it as well, so yeah. So anyhow, sorry, I will pay attention.
So anyway, so we're tapping into our central self, we're boiling out the oil.
Yes.
And then it's very easy to forget the role of the practice in just keeping that water clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where people often go awry. They're like, oh, well, this is done, that's done. And then they make this step where, like, there's a different level of clarity about the reflection they see in that pond.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, well, this is me. I'm sort of fortified, I'm reified, I've achieved this, I've accomplished this, I've manifested what I want to. And so, like, I've overcome that. I've ticked the box, I've finished yoga, I'm ready to go out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then the risk is, at least, that actually what begins to happen is that little bits of pollutants start to build up and sediment. And maybe eventually that sediment ends up as karma. You can push it down and then it gets stuck in there. It becomes karmic. And so people are very good at avoiding it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people just like the distorted reflection a whole lot.
Mm. What's your thoughts on distorted reflection?
I think that it's just a fundamental part of being human.
I
think
that
people are, for the most part, bad about seeing themselves actively. I think it's hard. I think people project themselves into things. I think other people project themselves onto each other.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that I'm pretty grateful for with, I mean, with yourself as well, but also with Esther, because I'm just often saying, is it me? What am I saying here? Well, you know, and I guess that comes not only with yoga, but with journaling as well. You know, the journaling is actually really good, because then you can look back a couple of months, the next year, and then you can think, actually, I was there again. Yeah. I was there.
You can begin to see there, the patterns.
And it happened again. And it's happened again and again. And then that repetitive is, you know, because sometimes for me, even with the studio and with teachers here, I'm just like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? And then when I look at the wider aspect of it, I realize that human nature is human nature.
It's human nature.
You know, not only for us, but for everyone else around as well.
Yeah. But essence, nature is there, or Shiva consciousness, or Buddha mind, whatever you want to call it, it's there. And that's the thing that we're trying to access, tap into, clarify, clear the residue from, so that we can just bathe in that place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think one thing, actually, one of the students, Jen, was just saying, even as we were sat outside, and it's ironic because it was everything that we taught in the lunchtime class today, she was like, I've realized that actually I need to pay attention when things are good. I need to just notice when things are good, because it's easy, and we say this a lot in like intentions, that it's easy for your practice to become like this perpetual excavation, like a witch hunt, and it's like, well, let's dig out and burn out, and actually it's much more about expanding that that viewpoint,
because in actual fact that ends up being that ends up being the key to healing that that nervous system's response, isn't
just
it?
Reconciling the paradox.
Yeah, and then if you practice when things are good and there's a happy period going through, then that's really feeding.
It's the same thing, and then mm-hmm. I actually think there's something more valuable in practicing understanding transience with the things that you really want.
Mm-hmm.
And so I personally find it's easier to be like, well, I don't want this thing. I can work with it. I can manage it. I can understand it's transient.
Mm.
And then that's great. That's a wonderful place to start.
Mm-hmm.
But where you then really get stuck in the heart is that difference between, well, actually, this thing that I'm really proud of is mm-hmm. also transient. This mm-hmm. thing that felt like an accomplishment is also transient.
Mm.
And in many ways, only to a very, very small degree actually are credit.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so we're very happy to pass off responsibility for things that are difficult.
Mm.
We like to cling on to the responsibility for things that are wonderful.
And not take responsibility for the...
Yeah, but then we get stuck in that sticky, tricky ego space.
Yeah.
And maybe we have a nice, clarified, well-fortified ego.
Yeah.
But then I think actually that point is the point that the real practice begins.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because there is this first stage of, well, let's get solid enough in who we are.
Come on, little one.
To begin actually to dissolve that outer boundary and realize all of the other possibilities that are there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the ultimate promise and possibility of the practice only begin to arise when we start to examine actually what arises when we feel like we don't kind of quote unquote need the practice.
Yeah. I guess we need to find out what people think as well. There's a little area that you can comment on this, and it would be really interesting to find out what people think. And if people feel like they're little, oh my God, that tickles so much. It's like, but also quite low.
Well, ironically, so this week especially, like four or five people have been like, oh, I was listening, it was so interesting.
Mm.
But then one guy came up to me and was like, so I was listening to that Carly episode. I was like, I didn't actually get to the end of it, so maybe I should do that first. But I couldn't really fathom where you were going with it.
Does that surprise you? I mean, it's an ongoing joke. I mean, and you know this. I mean, with me, but also with Esther and I, because you're so... I mean, we just love the kind of... I'm not even going to say the simple format, but it's just less kind of... got a little chew toy. I guess it's less about... You don't need the chew toy.
No, I'll let you make
it. It's less intricate for us. It's more tangible for us. You know, I don't need to swim in...
I don't need to swim in a thesaurus
and find out how I can, you know, work out the intricacies of it. I feel it and then try to make sense of it. Do you know what I mean?
Where do you feel it?
With what, particularly?
In your fingers?
My toes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, my gosh, that's my thing, making a song out of everything.
Well, why don't we wrap up there?
Mm,
because
mm-hmm.
I think contemplating swimming in the waters of your essence and understanding how to unpick your good as well as your difficulties is quite enough to chew on for what I'm saying.
One last question. What's your yoga practice like? Because, I mean, I know
you asked me that two episodes ago.
Did I?
We did a whole episode.
Because you teach a lot. Like, you teach a great deal.
I do.
But in actual fact, your practice is, again, more meditation, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the fundamental part of my practice is the meditative component.
Mm.
I love the asana. I love moving my body.
But also you take that asana into cycling and running and things like that. Like you cycle and run, you know, 15 to 20 miles like twice a week or something. So it's not like when it's raining, I always like you to take a nice run so I can call karma in. But anyway, that's another Another conversation.
I'll be cycling home past the same puddle, just around half past eight.
And then, so for you, it's nice because you also go into meditation during that as well, don't you?
Well, I think there is a non-arbitrary link between the postures and the deeper philosophical practice. And I like the idea. So in Tantra, there's a map of the levels of the body, which goes
like the layers of the energy body.
Yeah, the layers of the energy body. A cheeky booker. That was a little nip.
Well, that works for lots of practices as well, especially within the shamanic realm as well.
But so what I like about this one is that the outermost layer is called Vastu, and in this one, I just translate it as stuff. It's just everything. Everything basically beyond your skin, so the clothes, the room, and I love that that's included in a sense of the subtle self. And so then the outermost layer that's still kind of within your physique, if you like, is it's called deha. It just means the physical body. And then the layers get subtler and subtler and subtler, and right at the core of it is this sort of tapping into essence, nature. You are a tinker. But the idea with this one and with a lot of the sort of householder paths and the realization paths is that the idea is that actually each subtle layer infuses the layer above it. And so whereas many systems don't ultimately value the body and the world, in this practice it says, well, actually, this is the level in which you can experience all of these things. You can experience not just your body and all of this path through it, but you can also experience your, you know what, Lowell wriggled less than you when he was little. I think he would sit down.
I have to say, having a puppy is harder than having a child for me.
But you can engage the whole of your life from that point as well.
Yeah, that's
true. And
that's
what's so wonderful about it. So you constantly meet things, and you know, in the same way that we can use a posture as a metaphor for understanding ahimsa or satya or ego or coveting or all of these. I mean, I think probably most of us should just be focusing on the various yamas and niyamas again and again and again, because there's whether we look at the 10 mahavidyas as a way, or we just look at the principles.
Teething so much.
But this is ridiculous.
It's easy to do with Lowell.
I know, just shh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The beast will march Lowell to sleep. But so you can do it all in the practice. You can do it when you're running. You can meet edges and challenge, and also you can just enjoy it. And part of that practice is also about enjoyment. You know, I was listening to a big part of my practice at the moment, actually, is listening to satsang. And so I was listening to satsang this morning, specifically Shambhavi,
which translates as,
well, I don't actually know what her name translates as. Shambhavi Saraswati is her name.
Nice.
She said it. She told me when she got the name, what it meant.
Yeah.
No, not personally, through her podcast.
Yeah. Because, it is nice when you're given a name. I know that when I graduated, I got a shaman name. And I love that these people also have been given names. So I'm always intrigued by their meanings, because the meanings are honoured and given to them by their teachers, by their...
I imagine it has something to do with Shiva, Shambhava. I would have to look. I will.
Yeah, you do that. You do that.
But she was saying, she was quoting her teacher. And she was talking about Ganesh, how Ganesha always holds sweets in one hand.
Yeah.
And she was saying that actually that there is a part of this that's just like, well, you are supposed to find an enjoyment in it. You are allowed to just enjoy it. You can eat the sweets without getting lost in all of those things. And so,
in what's it called?
Modaka.
Moderation.
In moderation, yeah. They're called modaka. Yeah. Well, but no, not necessarily in moderation with clarity.
With clarity.
With clarity.
Yeah. But to be in moderation, that clarity is something that's clear. Talking about running, I love that Libby has
started the running
time. The Run Times Live, because she is just such an inspiration, mm-hmm. and she's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person that is, I think, going to create a wonderful little community with that.
I think so.
And it's the fact already... that she's doing it, you know, she does it for charity. So there's a real, mm-hmm. there's a real substance underneath it. It's not for mm-hmm. her own practice. It's not for, well, you know, anything is. Other than. No, I mean, she doesn't need to do this.
No.
You know,
no,
she doesn't need to do it to build anything or, you know, for Instagram or for anything else like that. But what she's doing it for, she's doing it in honor. Yeah. of something, and I just love that. I love that you know she's doing it in honor, and it's yeah. There's a variety of honors, you know, whether it's mental health, whether it's a lung cancer charity, whatever. It's mm-hmm. it's just beautiful. I love it.
I think what it comes down to at the end of the day is that she's sharing.
Come on, Lily.
She's gonna.
Come on, Lily.
She's sharing a passion of hers that. She ripped it. We'll just use that for us, her biscuits. That's engendered change for her.
Yeah.
She began that process not believing she was capable of it, and she realized that she was.
And I feel that's why I feel so warmly proud of her achievements, because I get that, you know, running is hard, and it's something that takes a great deal of intensity on the body. You know, I think that our bodies aren't.
Depends how you do it.
Yes, it does, absolutely. Yeah, but especially speaking from a woman and from a physical point of view, you know, running is hard. It's hard on the knees. It's hard on the hips. If you've done it consistently your entire life, it's different because your body knows it.
Yeah.
But when you haven't, and
there
then you
are a necessary stage of adaptation.
Yeah.
That is difficult, and you have to work through with sensitivity.
Mm. It's like cycling, isn't it? It's like it gets you in a particular position that your body then. Has to adapt to.
It has to understand how to balance and counterbalance that stress.
Yeah.
How to make sure you don't go numb downstairs.
Ouch.
That's when I'll stop cycling.
I know.
I'll
have
stand up one day and think.
Those really attractive padded cycling shirts. The only way that I can sit on a bike seat is wearing those. And then even sometimes I double them up, don't I? So like cycling shorts and a pair of leggings with the padding.
You've got one of those gel things that sits over
the top. Yeah. Just because it's intense. Mm-hmm. But yes, no. So yeah, I'm really happy that that is part of it, because again, with that there'll be a bit of. Mindfulness with that too, you know?
And an element of, well, it's raining, I've kind of got the speed I want actually, but there's just something wonderful about staying with the practice of it, staying with the community of it.
Yeah.
Becoming a support for other people, passing that on and understanding different levels of how you're engaging with it. Mm. And so it's always such a shame when people feel like they've ticked off the benefits of the practice and they just sort of stop there.
Yeah.
Like, you know what, I've got this, I've got that, I'm quite happy. I'll maybe do a bit of maintenance. But that, like, but you know what? I bet there's more to this.
There is. But I would say there are a few people who come into it for very different reasons. Mm-hmm. But then I imagine when they stop, they forget the reasons they went into it. But then they'll get to a point where they'll need it and they'll go back to it, you know, wherever that is, wherever that may be. But I mean, to be honest, you know, there are people that have been coming regularly, weekly.
For decades. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's funny you say about different reasons for arriving, because that's always a bit of a hot topic, isn't it? And people often ask when I started and how I started. And the honest truth is, in my like early teens, at a festival, when I was smoking something, I was like, I had a hot stone massage.
Gosh, you did.
And it was a life transforming experience.
Oh, gosh, it was.
having walked at a very interesting pace out of a quarry with all sorts of interesting things going on. And And you know what? It was fully pretentious. I was like, I'm this kind of hippie thing. I'm going to do this. You know what would really complete this? I'll get into yoga and holistic stuff. And it was the most pretentious start, you know. Mm-hmm. It was entirely pretentious.
Yeah.
But I was reading a story the other day about the story of Shumba and Nishumba and this idea of sort of coveting the goddess. So Shumba and Nishumba basically gain all these boons and they sort of trick the gods into losing their powers. Mm-hmm. And they're sort of taking over things.
Mm-hmm.
And two of their generals, Chanda and Munda, to go out.
Ah, yes, I know this.
And as they're walking down along the riverside, they see Durga bathing and they're gobsmacked by her beauty and they go back and report to the general. They're like, oh, this most marvelous, wonderful creature, you know, because you're the highest of the high, surely. You should have her. And so Shumba sends them to go bring her to him in voluntary marriage, which obviously doesn't happen. And I've read this story really many times, but when I was reading it the other day, the extra section I'd never read before, because ultimately what happens is that the goddess ends up beheading Chanda and Munda. You know, they represent the fluctuations of the ego and attachment, ends up beheading them.
But
the added message that really transformed it for me was that even though what they needed was their heads dropping off, that there were, and they were doing it for all the wrong reasons, there was still something about them that knew that was the thing, that was what they needed.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst they could only see it through the lenses of all of their stuff, they were like, yes. Mm. And so they got their liberation.
By getting their heads chopped off.
How they anticipated it. But I think the same is true
How's
for
that
me.
Translating into real life?
It certainly has felt
you need
like
your head chopping
I've
off.
Had many heads chopped off in this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really easy to be so critical of the reasons people come and the reasons people go and what attracts them. And people get all impure, pure motive.
Mm.
But you know what? I think something is still saying, this is it. You need this.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you can follow that, And follow it, suspending needing to know how it goes, which is so hard.
Yeah.
Then there is just such wonder there.
Yeah. I think I don't. I don't like to think that it's the judgment, but it's the intrigue to see at what point it calls them back, because I've been there.
Yeah.
You know. Obviously, mine wasn't as a pretentious story as yours. Mine was just like sheer desperation, and I just needed something.
It was super cool.
Headspace. Because, I mean, you know, after doing it with my friends for a period of time, it wasn't a continued thing that my friends did. But I do think that coming to the particular yoga class that I did on the day that I did allowed me to meet people that I did that then paved the rest of my life.
Like when you came to my class.
Well, I mean, not your class specifically, but you may have been present in the room. But I think that there are, I mean, that's a whole other story. You know, yoga teacher, student at the time.
Wow, no, you weren't the student. You were working for the same company. And you were sent by our then boss to spy on my classes.
No, I wasn't. So I wasn't. I was supporting you.
We'd still have
you.
To it declare it to HR, basically.
It was a new class you were starting. I came to support. But no,
you
think...
You didn't come to support. You were sent.
I wasn't sent. I wasn't. But I know that you feel like you were under the watchful eye, but I don't think that was true at all. But I think that I do think that you would be surprised on what comes from attending a yoga class, you know? And
there you go.
Voila.
Give it a go. And then, because why not? One of my favorite quotes from Matt LaCarta is, true healing is always something of a surprise.
Ah, I love that one. Love it. Ho.